Hey everyone, and welcome to High Performance Pathways, Season 2, Episode number 5. I'm your host, Court Whitman, and today's podcast is sponsored by the Notecast app. You can use that Notecast app to download podcasts just like this, and to save kind of the content and the snippets of things that folks are talking about, so you don't forget it. There's so many people that are consuming podcasts like this while they're exercising or while they're on that drive, and like, man, I wish I could write something down. The Notecast app solves that problem for you. You can find Notecast app in Apple Store or on Google Play. And if you enjoy this podcast and kind of the perspective you gain from listening to something like this, check more about me out at my website, courtwhitman.com. Hey, if you're brand new to this podcast, let me frame for you what it's all about. High Performance Pathways is a purpose-built and specially selected collection of someone's experience as they discuss how they understand, discover, and chase high performance in their life. Now, this content is collected during a one-on-one interview, and then we share it out with you. Why? Because I believe that everyone has a different path to high performance. And hearing about the paths that other professionals have journeyed along, it does two things. It inspires and it informs us so we can make decisions in our own life. So during each episode of High Performance Pathways, it is my intent to do 5 things for you as a listener. Number one, I'm going to connect you to someone else to build out your relationships. And I encourage folks to connect with my guests. That's why they're on here. Networking is not a bad thing, right? It's how we learn. Number two, question to understand. Number three, I'm going to share to raise perspective. Number four, I'm going to teach to increase competence. And number five, I'm going to inspire. I'm going to inspire your growth as you're listening. One additional note to cover as you continue listening to this podcast today. Hey, we're coming at you raw. What does that mean? It means there's no post-editing to this conversation. And it means that in some cases, you know, I may drop off, right? Because we're holding this thing together, you know, with kind of some tape and some Band-Aids. But just know that in some cases, we'll drop off. Bear with us. We'll be right back with you, and we'll keep this thing rolling. But there's no post-editing work done from this podcast that you're hearing from us. Now, super excited about my guest today. And it is Sean Schult. Colonel retired Sean Schult is an executive logistics and supply chain professional, operational and program manager with more than 25 years of experience gained as a military veteran of our incredible United States Army. A little bit more about Sean here. Sean has a very deep, comprehensive background in logistics and supply chain and project management with experience leading teams and cross-functional teams up to over 1,200 people that have been responsible for HR, budget management, and execution of budgets upwards of about $60 million. He's done contracting, program management, and he's worked that stuff from really launch operations, or really conception through launch operations, in a number of different dynamic, fast-paced environments across the world based upon his responsibilities and his assignments in the military. Now, talking about the military, in the Army, Sean served in a number of challenging leadership and managerial positions that started very early as a platoon leader, where he was responsible for small teams, about 30 or so. And then this went all the way up to positions of increased responsibility as his selection was of one of only 10 sustainment brigades in the entire active duty Army that he commanded, which places him within the top 5% of his class, of his performance, of people that are, had the opportunity to command at his level. Now, where did Sean's kind of education start and develop throughout his years in service? Well, a number of places. He earned a BA in finance from Iowa State, an MS in logistics, materials, and supply chain management from Florida Institute of Technology. He's got a diploma in military and strategic leadership from the U.S. Army Command and General Staff College. And Sean was the number one selection of active duty officers to attend the Harvard Kennedy School out of a field of over 200 folks. And he went on to serve as a National Security Fellow at Harvard University, John F. Kennedy School of Government, where the focus there for him was on management and leadership. Sean retired from the Army in 2019, and he's currently serving as a supply chain strategic planner for MB Solutions Incorporated in the Tampa-St. Pete area of Florida. Now, what's really great about this is that Sean and I have a relationship that goes almost a year back. And we first met in February of 2019 when Sean was specifically selected for high-performing veteran transition assistance by the Commit Foundation, a company in which I'm partnered with and that I serve there as a transition coach. And we worked together for about 5 months during Sean's transition out of the Army and into his first civilian job. And over that time, I learned a lot about Sean, right? And I can say, without any reservation whatsoever, that he is one of the most humble and approachable senior military officers that I've had the pleasure to work with and know. Sean attacked his transition with a growth mindset. And for anybody listening, and I know I got a lot of folks listening to this show, they're in their own transitions, and we're going to talk about a little bit together today. You got to attack it. You got to treat it like a mission. And that's one of the things that Sean did. He also was open to learning. He was open to growing. He was open to considering what really his life would look like as in an incredibly fulfilled life in this next season, having had a family and other things that are really important to him. And because of that, I learned to know that Sean has a deep love for that family that he has and also for sport. And that's why I was fired up to have him on the show. And a sport I don't know very well, so we might talk a little bit about hockey. So I hope that gives you a little bit of context about this great, phenomenal individual that's going to kind of share some perspective with you today. So, Sean, hey, I'm thankful for you, and I appreciate you checking in with us here today to say share some of your perspectives, man, on your life and the high performance that you was able to achieve. Thanks.
Hey, Court, man, it's truly an honor to be here. You know, I've listened to a lot of your podcasts and some of the guests you've had on, so definitely humbled to be in their presence, and, you know, thanks for taking the time to have me on today, and thanks for, you know, our relationship over the past, you know, year. I truly appreciated it, and I'm looking forward to this podcast. I'm excited about it, and excited to share, you know, my journey with your audience, and, you know, hopefully some folks can take something away from it, you know, and add value in their life. So thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man, and you're hot off the press. I mean, we're talking, you know, transition through retirement into your first job in the last, what, 6 months? Am I right? 5 months? Frame that for me.
Yeah, just 6 months. Like,
yeah. So, I mean, brand new perspectives, which matters, right? So, hey, because of that, Sean, you're specially selected, man. I think without a doubt, there's stuff that you can share that is helpful for the listeners. So we're happy to have you. And I'd like to just get started here together to talk about sport, right? To gain some insight into how that has had an impact on your developmental journey. And now I know that you coach or have coached in the past youth hockey. I don't know that you're actively doing it now, but I know that you certainly did in the past, and certainly you can comment on that for us. But you've done that at least for a number of years, and that your son plays hockey. So I'm just really curious in this first inquiry, you know, what might be some of your earliest memories of sport? And as you answer that, I'm curious, you know, we can talk about your participation in it, or maybe you as a coach, or maybe just being a dad for a kid that's playing hockey. Thoughts, Sean, on that?
Yeah, so I'll start, you know, kind of with the earliest memories. So I grew up, you know, a Midwest kid, grew up playing football, you know, from about eighth grade on. And, you know, I wasn't a high-performing elite athlete, you know, in high school, but I did it because I enjoyed the people. I enjoyed the teamwork, the camaraderie, the hard work that it took, you know, and to sort of share in that experience of winning and losing. It was important in sort of my development and kind of, you know, who I became as a person. And I talk about that, you know, as I reflect on what did I learn, you know, my high school years playing football. Because, you know, I was on the scout team. I was one of those guys, you know, the black shirt. Every week we, you know, ran the other team's offense, you know, for the defense, or the other defense for, you know, the offensive starters. But what I learned and took away from that was, you know, the value of teamwork and the value that everybody on that team has a role to play. And everybody, if everybody does their job to the best of their God-given ability, then the team as a whole gets better. And so, you know, as I reflect a lot about that, you know, my job being on that scout team was to make sure that the guys on the other side of the line, I gave them the best look, the best challenge, that they could have for that week, you know, to get prepared for that Friday night game. So that's probably one of, you know, my earliest memories of sport, and, you know, and that's carried with me about doing your job and being the best you can at your job.
Yeah. So can I just comment on that for a second?
Yeah, absolutely.
I love hearing that reflection, because my memory go immediately to my freshman year in college when I was a scout team hero. Right. I mean, that's what I did. Right. I was a walk-on football player, and that's what I did. And I can still remember to this day when we ever do punt team or special teams, I was certainly the guy in the black shirt, like you said. I was busting my ass to get through the line and try to block a punt or something. So much so that I remember the upperclassmen being like, "Man, what is this guy trying to do, man? What are you trying to prove, dude? It's just practice." Yeah, well, not so fast. That's what got me to start on special teams my sophomore season, right? And then go on to be a scholarship athlete. And so that the stuff matters, right? So shout out to anyone like Sean who's the grinder in this moment on scout team, you know, making it happen. Because, hey, we've both been there. Amen to that, man. Please continue.
Yeah. So, you know, but as I kind of, you talk a lot about hockey, and hockey's just kind of become one of these things that's ingrained in our family now. So we were in upstate New York, and my son started playing hockey, and it was something he really enjoyed and, you know, enjoyed watching. It's a fast-paced sport. It's something, you know, I didn't grow up around, but it's just a fun sport to be around. And so, you know, one thing I'll share here, you know, I think my son was probably 9 or 10 years old, like I think your son is, Court. And,
yep.
You know, he'd had a game and, you know, I don't remember, it was an important game at the time, but, you know, now 10 years later, it's, you know, it was just a game. And, you know, we get out to the van afterwards and, you know, and, you know, I'm competing for dad of the year at this time. And, you know, we get in the van and I probably wait all of like, you know, maybe 30 seconds and said, "Hey, you know, when the guy's in front of the net, you got to do this and you got to move, you know, can't do this and you got to do all these things." I had all these great advice for him, you know, my 8-year-old son. And he, with probably the most stoic and serious face, said, "Dad, what do you know? You don't even know how to skate. You can't even skate backwards, you know?" And, and you know, and I think we all have this, you know, relationship, you know, with our spouse, who's always very understanding and compassionate. And my wife, Renee, looks me dead in the eyes and says, "You know, he's right." So, at that point, you know, I knew that I was not speaking from a shared experience perspective. And right then, you know, I signed up to play, adult learn to skate, to play hockey at the local rink here, fell in love with it, doing it myself, realized that, you know, it's not as easy to move your feet, move your hands, and keep your head up all at the same time on ice when you're, you know, your body's not meant to be on ice. And so sure. That gave me and my son, you know, a bonding experience that, you know, and something now, you know, probably want to, you know, Court, I'll share with you one of my best memories. You know, he was 10 years old and I was playing beer league hockey and, you know, he came on the bench and was coaching me. And I think he said, you know, "Dad, when he's in front of the net, you got to clear him out." And I felt, you know, like, they got me. So, you know, sport's an important part, for us as a family. You know, these road trips back and forth, you know, you're spending time with your kids and, that level of competition and teamwork is just something that I think every kid should enjoy, and be part of.
Absolutely, man. What an incredible reflection. As I listen to you here, I'm thinking to myself, you started with what it looked like at you in eighth grade, maybe, and how you played, and you parlayed that into, you know, what you're doing as a dad here. And what I'm hearing is at 40 years old, sport is continuing to develop even you. And in this case, maybe not as an active player in that moment, as you recall that story with your son, but with a desire to stay engaged with your son, to care, to help him be his best. You know, you made a decision there and said, you know what? Maybe I do need to look at influence a different way as a dad in this moment. And what can I accept, which was to learn how to skate, you know, and there he was coaching, man. You know, a year or two later. So phenomenal, man. Sport is incredible. It's that non-traditional classroom. However you find yourself connected as a player, as a coach, or as a parent for someone playing. I mean, I can tell you, man, I got such vivid memories of watching my brothers and my sister play as the oldest of five. Now as a dad of a 10 and a 9-year-old, good gracious. I mean, it's just watching your own play takes on a whole different level than just watching the game. So thanks for sharing that out, man. Let's transition here for a moment to kind of post-college and what you decided to do after Iowa State, which was the Army. And so I'm just curious, what inspired you to join the Army, Sean, and then to stay there for so long, 25 years, man. And, oh, by the way, a lot of war, buddy, a lot of deployments, a lot of work being put in by our Army over that span of time. So could you share with the listeners, man, what inspired you to join and stay?
Yeah, absolutely, Court. You know, I've listened, like I said, I listened to a couple of your podcasts, and I know your journey. You were inspired, you know, to go to join at a young age, and everybody's path's different. So for me, my path wasn't necessarily destined for the Army in a sense. And it started, you know, my senior year in high school. You know, I knew that the end goal was to go to college. I wanted to go to college. I wanted to get that 4-year degree.
Sure.
But I also knew that, you know, my family, my parents were going through a divorce at the time. And, you know, most arguments were around money. So I knew that the money wasn't there for me to be able to go to Iowa State University or whatever school I had chosen. And so I vividly remember, you know, you get the, you know, the go Army, be all that you could be back then, flyer in the mail. And I guess, you know, they used to send mailings out, and then, you know, it's followed up 2 days later by a recruiter, you know, and it's 4:30 in the afternoon. My parents are both at work, and he's like, hey, you know, gives me sort of the pitch about how to, you know, the Army can help you pay for college. And he says, are you interested? I said, absolutely. He says, all right, we'll be there tomorrow. And wow. So the recruiter comes to the house, you know, I fill out all the paperwork and, you know, get ready to sign up. And he's at the end of it, he says, well, how old are you? And I said, well, I'm 17. He says, oh, we need to talk to your parents. You know, I hadn't even talked to my parents. You know, I knew what the objective was. No, you know. And, you know, and for me, and so, yeah. And I remember telling my parents, I remember my mom crying. My dad, like, okay, where do we sign? but that started, you know, it started my journey. So I enlisted, you know, I did a year in the reserves. And then halfway through my freshman year, I had decent, you know, good grades. And I got a call from the ROTC department and said, hey, are you interested in this? And I said, hey, it's helping me on the path that I want to achieve, which is getting out of school. How do I pay for school? How do I get through this and come out on the other end the best way possible? And so I signed up for ROTC, and I loved it. I enjoyed it. And then I got an active duty commission, and I'll never forget. It was December 27th, and we were at my mom's place, and my girlfriend at the time, now my wife, we get the call, and it says, hey, Cadet Schultz, congratulations. You got active duty infantry. And I said, sure, like, you can't, are you serious? Like, that can't be me, you know, because I wasn't on that pathway to high performance as a college ROTC cadet. But it was. And I had a 4-year stint, and Renee and I got married that first stint. And we had kind of come out with this motto that as long as we're enjoying it, we enjoy the people, and it's good for us and our family, then we'll stay with it. And, at every move and every decision point, that was our metric. Are we having fun? Do we enjoy it? And does it work for us and our family? And it did for 26 years. And I loved every minute of it.
That's incredible, man. I love how everyone has a different kind of jump off into service. And that's why I think the Army is probably one of the best representations of or random sampling of kind of our society out there, because people come to it from so many different paths, as you just explained yours, which is very different than mine. For me, it was dad was in the Army. He's doing great stuff for the family. Why not? That's what I want to do, right? And yours was a little bit different. And shout out to Renee, man, in this moment, because good gracious, I don't know anyone that could serve that long and still be married without the support that comes from a spouse that allows you to do what you do. So, you know, if she listens to this, just know that I'm giving her a fist bump for all the stuff that she did as she served as your wife throughout all of that. So thanks for sharing, man. As we talk about the Army, right, be really curious to some insight with all that time that you spent. Best memories of the Army, right? We talked about best memories of sport, but maybe best favorite assignments, best memories maybe. It could be just a conversation you had that you never forget. I think we all have them, right? I still remember a guy that I worked, this was before the war started, to get an education early out because he played flag football, and we did that kind of stuff as a young officer and a young in the Army before he had tremendous responsibility. And I got him out 3 months early from his assignment, and he went to college on a football and track scholarship and then played for the Baltimore Ravens. And I ran into him 14 years later at a gym in Fort Benning, and he thanked me for that, right? I never thought I'd run into that kid again. Antoine Schufer's his name. Anyway, so I'm just curious, man, what memories might you have, Sean, from the Army?
Yeah, so, you know, when I wrote these notes, I kind of focused on the assignments, but I'm really glad you sort of prompted me there. I think probably some of the best memories I have are really the people and the friends that I've made. And, you know, I went to the infantry officer basic course with a guy named Ken Weichel, and he's still serving today. And, you know, he's probably one of my best buds. And so we show up first day in the Army together. We go through 16 weeks infantry officer basic course. You know, he tells me that you got to go to the 82nd, got to go to the 82nd. I go off to Fort Lewis. He goes to the 82nd. You know, 2.5 years later, I show up to Fort Lee, Virginia for the transition course. And it's like 5:30 in the morning. You know, all these schools you always start with, you know, the weigh-in and a PT test. And out of the dark, this guy yells, "Schultz, what are you doing?" And I'm like, "Holy cow, man, that's Weichel. Like, I hadn't talked to you in, you know, 2 years. Where have you been up to?" And so, you know, we quickly reframe that bond. We go do the course. Two years later, we show up to the advanced course together. We go to Korea together. And, you know, that lifelong friendship over 26 years is probably what when I have to sum up the thread of assignments and all the assignments and jobs and all that stuff's great. But it's that sort of friendship and teamwork that stands the test of time that I don't think anywhere else in the world you'll find except for in the Army or the Armed Services for that matter.
Yeah. And I don't know what it is about it, right? Because I try to unpack this a lot because I think that what you might be hitting on there a little bit is there's a fit there. There's something between you and Ken that just worked, right? And we can, we try to put words around that. There's maybe values or maybe things that you enjoy that made that work. And then I think the other thing about it is there's a trust there in some capacity. I mean, you didn't say this, but I'm kind of feeling this as a reflect back on relationships. There's a trust there and people want that. Corporate America wants that. Like how do we build relationships fast is a question I get all the time. And it's funny. I think it's just go through a shared hardship, right? Or what I like to call deliberate discomfort, right? And you probably experienced that in the infantry basic course together, right? And I think that's why in some cases, you know, those relationships just become lifelong, like you said. You know, if you've gone through a suck experience with someone, there's a good chance they're going to stay a close friend. So anyway, don't know if that resonates with you at all, but that's kind of what sometimes resonates with me. Just sometimes going through those things with people, really you come out on the other end pretty daggone close. So here's a question, right? I know your son's probably, I don't know, 17, 18. If I got it right, Sean, I can't remember exactly. Am I close on that?
Yeah, 18. Exactly.
So, I don't know if he's considering joining the Army or anything like that, but there's tons of folks out there that are 17 and 18 that are. And so I'm just curious, what advice might you have, Sean, for someone that is considering the Army or just the military in general? You know, and what might they expect from something like that, if maybe they're indecisive?
Yeah. So I really like this question, you know, because it forced me to sort of reflect, you know, why did I join or why did I stay, right? Not just, you know, why do you join, but why do you stay?
Absolutely.
What, you know, as you look back, so one thing I think, you know, that resonates and I've reflected on is structure. At the end of the day, the services are going to give that young, you know, 20, either 23-year-old young officer or an 18-year-old young enlisted man structure, right? There's a framework that you can build off of to build success. You know, there's a value of hard work, the value of teamwork, right? You're going to get a sponsor, but there's structure to it. There's a path to success. I used to say this all the time. If you want to know how to get promoted in the Army, like we publish it, there's a manual. Like you have to do this job, this job, this job. If you want to make sergeant, right, you have to have this many promotion points. So sure. There's a path to success. And that structure, you know, I tell you, is invaluable for someone who maybe needs that structure. Maybe they're struggling through their freshman year of college because it's the first time they're away from home, or that first, you know, experience outside of college. And there's structure in the service, and it's going to give you the values that you can carry with you. And then probably the one thing that I think, you know, we could talk a lot about service and the intrinsic values. But there's also, like, the Army's going to take care of you and your family. You're going to get paid pretty well for, you know, your experience, you know, in the GI Bill and those things that can carry you forward into the world. Even if you only serve 4 years or 6 years or whatever it is, I think you're going to gain that. And I'm a big advocate for folks who are considering it, because it's not a life. It doesn't have to be a lifelong decision. You could do it for 4 years, and that's a blink of an eye in most people's lives. So, yeah, I think those are the positives. I think if you, the probably the counterpoint is you need to be flexible and be able to deal with some unpredictability, and just have trust in that people are building that predictability for you, if that helps.
Absolutely, it does. And just to kind of brief you back, what you've shared here for anyone listening that is considering service in our Army, from a guy that's been in it for 25 years, if you're looking for some structure, the Army is a place for you. And specifically, not just the structure. We're not just talking about people telling you what to do, because I would say that me and Sean certainly experienced that, but that probably wasn't what we loved about the Army. But there's a pathway for success. There's pretty clear communication on what you need to do to continue to be promoted and do well in the field. And I would say I was a guy that didn't heed that advice as my career got older. For me, it wasn't the Army wasn't pushing me to things that I wanted to do. I didn't have a Renee with me that was saying, yep, we're still having fun. It's still going great. You know, I kind of more chased a selfish approach to it. But structure coming from Sean. And the second thing you said is that it's going to take care of you. You're going to be paid, right? So you didn't say this, but maybe the word stability kind of shows up for me in this moment. It's a stable thing. If your service is consistent with uniform code of military justice, right? Which is sometimes tough, but you definitely right. have certain things you got to do. You got to stay in shape. You got to do the right thing. You got to be a soldier, right? Because it matters. Because there's a lot of folks that have gone before you, and a lot of they're going to come after you that represent what this great Army or military is. And so when Sean talks about taking care of you, you're going to get paid well, right? And then potentially you can have what we call, and Sean introduced the GI Bill, which is a scholarship option. So you can get money to join, and you can get money when you decide to leave because of an option where you could take and be qualified for scholarship. So it could be your pathway to college after a couple years. So again, in just the dark side here, it's unpredictable, right? So be flexible. So Thanks for that sharing, man. Anything else on that one?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you're going to go through some hardship. It's not easy. It's not, you know, it's not for everyone. But man, if you do it on the far side, the experiences you're going to gain and the friendships you're going to gain are worth every hardship and every bit of the work that you're going to have to put in.
Absolutely. I would second that. And really sitting here in retirement with a gift that will give back to me, will give back to your entire life. You know, there's a pension that you get in your 40s. If you and some folks that can retire earlier than that, depending on when they started, right? And that's for life. And good gracious, I'm not even sure how much that's going to make an impact on me and my kids and until really the years progress. But and then the medical care too is huge. So, absolutely. Thanks for sharing that, man. I would like to, with your permission, keep the conversation rolling and talk now about transition. Transition specifically because, as you talked about earlier, you did it within the last 6 months, and you're in a brand new world, which is I am no longer putting on the Army uniform. And so if you would, Sean, just let's talk about this a little bit because people are curious how to do this well, and you certainly did. Your first job, and we'll talk about the job, and it might be not the job that you want to talk about, but I'll open the question with the job that you find yourself in and make sure I get this right. You're now in you are a supply chain strategic planner for MB Solutions Incorporated. So that's your job you're doing. Transitioned out within the last 6 months. What challenges, man, did you face in your life? And I'm just curious, how did you work through those? And really come to a decision on what to do next.
Yeah. Wow. So I think I'm really excited about this part of it, this part of the podcast, because this is probably being really passionate about sort of sharing my lessons learned, because I felt like, that I learned a lot of hard lessons. So probably the biggest challenge, Court, I'm just going to tell you, man, I was lost. I felt lost in the process. I felt lost with what I wanted to do, what was important to me. Because, for like we talked, for 26 years, there was a structure, man. If you wanted to leave an installation, the Army gives you a checklist. Like, you got to clear post, right? Here are the 12 things you got to do before you. And then when you get to the new place, right, they give you, like, here's your in-processing checklist. Here are the 12 things you got to do. Now, all of a sudden, you have the biggest challenge in your life, and there's no checklist, man. There is no glide path. There's no how you measure success. Hey, that's up to you now. And so as a guy who my entire adult life, from the time I was 18, had been in a very structured environment, man, I was lost. And so that was my biggest challenge. And I think folks who are, at the senior level kind of struggle with that, because you have this confidence. So you've been very successful in everything you've done. And sure. Now all of a sudden you can't, how do you define success anymore? Now you got to define it for yourself. So that was a challenge. And the second challenge I faced was this question, man, what do you want to do next? Well, like, I was not prepared. I had an idea what I wanted to do, but I wasn't prepared to really answer that question in a clear, concise way, because I was very open to new experiences and new things and transition. And so I struggled with that question, answering that question. And it took me some time to kind of whittle through that. And I, that feeds in, I think, what we're going to talk about next. But those two things were probably the biggest challenges for me. And then the second or the third, I guess, I'd sort of lay out there is, you got two kids getting ready to go to college. Got a family that depends on you financially. Man, I had a huge fear of what did the future look like financially for my family if, I didn't find that lucrative job or that, job to help pay the bills. So those are three things that really, as I look back, were the three challenges at the very onset of the transition process.
Wow, man. If I'm talking to 10 people and I'm coaching them through transition, I'd say 90% of them have the exact same three challenges, fears even, right? Feeling lost. Yeah. What the heck do I want to do? Right. And I actually have some real constraints. I've got an 18-year-old that's on their way to college. I've built a certain livelihood based upon a standard of living. And for folks that are out there thinking that when you retire from the Army, you retire with a pension that's, equal to what you were making, that ain't working that way, right? It's right. Cutting the paycheck in about a half. So anyone that says that their Army retired just means I'm going on to my second job. So awesome, man. So some big challenges. How'd you work through them, right? How were you lost and get found? How did you figure out what it is you wanted to do? And I think the third one of provision, I'm interested in that too. But I think of the three that we have here, that one's probably the easiest for me, because I just try to step into a challenge with people that come with it. I say, well, what's your targeted compensation, man? Run the numbers. Tell me what you got to make. And then guess what? I know that right now, if you're in transition, you're like, yeah, that's great, Court. I'm telling you, I want to make 50 grand or 500 grand. And I'm fearful it's never going to happen. Well, we've all been there. But stepping into clarity around what that compensation needs to be is the most helpful thing that you can do when you're worried about the dollar sign. So I think that one's a little bit easier to solve. You may disagree with me, Sean, but I think of the three you struggled with, I think that one's the easiest. But, how'd you move through it, man? And then maybe what advice could you share for someone that's sitting with those same questions?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I'd agree with you, man. The financial one it's like the most overwhelming, but probably the easiest to solve, right? Like, it comes down to math and figuring it out and being patient and figuring it out. So I agree with you, absolutely. So, man, as I work through this, and I jotted down some notes for this, I have two themes that I think are overarching that people should always consider. And then I, talk about, sort of the framework that I would recommend if I had to do it again, how I'd do it again. The first and foremost, man, what I call ignore the noise, man. Ignore the Facebook, LinkedIn successes. So, like, nobody, so everybody has this, like on your Facebook friends, right? The family that's always on vacation, their kids are happy, they're well-dressed, right? They never have a fight. Like, you know, everything's perfect, right? The same thing happens on LinkedIn. You know, the title of your buddy, he's got a great title. He's making so much money. Man, ignore that noise. Ignore that noise, because it will become all-consuming, and you'll hear so many stories, but you'll only hear the surface story. And I'll give one example that happened to me personally. A gentleman, you know, a guy that, you know, a referral, talked, you know, said, hey, call this guy. He's got a great job doing X, Y, Z. And I talked to the gentleman, you know, and I spent about an hour and a half with him, and he was giving me all his tips, and he was, you know, telling me how successful he was and how this first job out of the Army was great, and et cetera, et cetera, man. And the whole time my stomach is just churning, like, man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to, you know, how do I get something like that? How do I get something like that? Well, guess what? 4 months later, it didn't work out. He wasn't making whatever, for whatever reason, but he never, that doesn't get posted. That does not get posted on LinkedIn.
No, it doesn't. Right? No, it doesn't.
Right. So rule number one, ignore the noise. Focus on, you know, what's important to you. Focus on you. You know, I'm a competitive guy, you know, under the skin, I'm competitive, right? But in the service, right, we know what success looks like. The promotion list comes out. You can read the names that are on it, and you know the names that probably aren't on it, right? And we have a very clear, you know, I don't want to say clear, but, you know, we can kind of define success by that. But that's not the way it works outside, because sure. Now the success is on you and how you define success. It's no longer defined by whether you get to go to this school or that school. It's about what's important to you. So that's probably number one, I'd say. And then the second theme, hey, Jump Master, this is my, you know, go back to Jump Master days, right, Court?
Right,
go slow to go fast. You know, and for those listeners that don't quite understand that, you know, the black hats that teach at the Jump Master School will tell you go slow to go fast. So one of the things you have to do to graduate that, right, is you got to inspect 3 parachute jumpers in 5 minutes. And in that 5 minutes, you got to identify if they got their kit on wrong or they got something wrong with that equipment that would endanger their life when they go to jump out of an airplane. That's pretty important, but you got to do 3 people in 5 minutes, and that's a fast. And so when you first start, you focus on the time. You're very focused on, I got to get through these guys in 5 minutes. But what happens is you're not seeing. You can't see because you're focused on speed.
Sure.
So go slow to go fast. So you can start to see things, and then the time and the job and all that will take care of itself if you go slow at the beginning and sort of define, you know, and develop your plan. Is that helpful to you, Court? Does that kind of make sense or resonate?
Absolutely. And I think because I have some insight into you, because of the time we spent together, I can certainly see how, you know, you're a guy that when we talked about some of the things that were your core competencies and the things that you valued was, hey, look, I want to make an impact. I want to do work that matters and is meaningful. And I think sometimes for someone that feels that way, and I think a lot of people that feel that way, but in your case, it was a really strong desire. Right? It's hard to ignore the noise. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the noise kind of sucks you in because you're saying, well, and you just talked about a minute ago, you said you're competitive, right? Hell, I'm competitive too. And I define that by I judge my success based upon how I compare to others that are doing the same things. And that was pretty clear in the Army, right? They told you, hey, you're number one, number two, number three, or you're number 12 of 12. And so,
right. You know,
for folks that are in transition and want to make that big impact, and they're seeing folks make an impact on LinkedIn or any other social media, it's tough. I think it's a distraction. That's what I was hearing from you, Sean, that it's a distraction, right? So if you're going to use LinkedIn, don't go in there fishing and don't, you know, try not to be on the scroll, but go in there and be very deliberate. Like, how do I figure out and target jobs that I may be interested in that could lead me to someone to connect with that I could, so I can learn and use it kind of for that networking aspect, but maybe not just to kind of watch and see, because it might be a distraction. You talked about focusing on you. Can you tease that out a little bit, man? On what you meant? Like, how did you find that focus on you, and what was important to you?
Yeah. So, Greg, I'm glad you asked. This is my notes. You know, so one of the tools that I found, obviously you talk to a lot of people, you know, Court, you and I built that relationship. It was super helpful. One of the tools I found too, and I'd recommend anybody, you know, I remember my dad was between jobs and they made him read this book. It's called What Color Is Your Parachute? So this book's been around, you know, for decades. But I picked up a copy, and I would recommend anyone transition and pick it up. It takes you through several exercises about sort of defining, you know, we talk a lot about values, kind of mission statement, all that stuff, but it real exercises that make you compare trade-offs. And I read that book, and it allowed me to realize what was important to me. And then, through our conversations, Court, we've talked a lot about significance. And what I realized was that my significance was no longer going to be judged by my job title or my position at work, but it was judged by the things that were important to me, which is my family, being part of a community, getting back into a church, contributing back to, you know, through a nonprofit or something like that in the community. And so no longer did I define success by what the job title or the salary range that I was going to get. Those things are important, obviously, but they were not the number one important thing. So by defining those things and focusing on what was important to me, it allowed me to shape my job search and shape, you know, what was acceptable and what did I want to do. Help me answer that first question. What do you want to do? I'll tell you, you know, since I've retired and taken this new role, I haven't missed a dinner at home with my family since I retired. And I can't say that about the last 3 years of my time in service.
And how does that make you feel?
Man, it feels awesome.
Hey, man, no trick question there, dude. I was just curious, right? Wonderful, Sean, right? Dude, first of all, I'm so happy for you because I don't know that you felt like you were going to feel that way 6 months ago when we were chatting, right? The other thing I'd like to say is that, hey, this is Sean. This might not be you, the listener, and that's okay. Right? Because all we're trying to offer here is Sean's perspective in transition and Sean's answer to the question, what criteria could I establish for me to feel fulfilled in my left, in my next life, not my left, but in my next life. And so Sean's saying a way to do that, you know, is, you know, one, maybe partner with somebody. Number two, read that book, man. What Color Is Your Parachute? I've not read that book, but I've heard a lot of people talk about it. So I'd say definitely pick that thing up. But then Sean just listed his criteria out for you on what a significant a life of impact felt like. And it did not lead at this moment with the job title, you know. And Sean, you're not working at Walmart, brother, right? And no criticism right to the folks that are, but you got, from what I understand, a pretty impactful, meaningful job. But it and when you really unpacked what was it that my life needed to look like in this next season, there's an answer for you around that, and there's an answer for everybody, and it might be different. So really appreciate, man, you allowed me to kind of tease it out a little bit to open up even a deeper understanding for the folks that are in transition and trying to figure out, man, hey, I'm lost and I'm trying to get it right. I don't know what I want to do. Well, ignore the noise. Focus on you, establish criteria that lead to a fulfilling life for you like Sean did, and you'll find an answer there. And maybe reading a book will help you tactically go through how to do that. And then maybe slow down. And I don't know exactly what you mean in this. I certainly went to Jumpmaster school, so I remember that. The other word I remember hearing from Jumpmaster school was smooth is fast and fast is smooth, Jumpmaster. And I'll tell you right now, if my daughter was in here, she would know exactly what that means because I tell it to my daughter Charlotte all the time when she's getting stressed out about an assignment with school or playing soccer. I'm like, hey, baby, smooth is fast, fast is smooth. So good gracious. I wonder how many other jump masters have had a lasting impact from that experience that we're now using in our life in a moment like this on a podcast or with our kids. And it's real, man. Right. And so I don't know what that means to you, right? So I'm curious kind of what that might mean, if you can unpack that at all. But what I'm thinking in my mind is patience And it's hard to be patient when you're struggling with these things that you said you were struggling with, like where am I going to make my income? How am I going to support the family? What am I going to do? Sometimes it's just helpful to create milestones. And if you know, until you identify that date that you have to accept the job if you're in transition, allow yourself to go slow or have patience. Yeah. So is that close to what you meant there, man? Or am I way off on that? Because that's the meaning I made in go slow to go fast.
Yeah, no, it's precisely it. I want to talk a little bit about the milestones because I think it's important. In my journey, and where I start, where I would put milestones now, a little bit different than, kind of than the way I did it.
Awesome.
When I say go slow to go fast, I knew I was retired. I knew how to get a job. I knew all these things. Right. And so I jumped right into what I would call. So let me back up. We talk a lot about develop a plan. I think I heard one of your last guests said, have a plan. And I've heard, you hear that a lot, man, have a plan. Well, what does that plan look like? What is the framework for that plan? And, and for 26 years, I grew very comfortable. I think we all grew comfortable with the planning framework that the Army uses. We call it MDMP, right? The military decision-making process. And we sure. had that broken down into mission analysis, right? And that was something that I now can use as a framework that I didn't necessarily do before. But, and when I say go slow to go fast, right? Corey, you were right. Like how long did we spend, on mission analysis, right? We would spend a ton of time on mission analysis because we knew if we get that right, then course of action development and execution goes relatively easy, right? So when we start, and I'm going to kind of unpack this because I think it's very applicable in a tactical sense for people who are transitioning. Because I jumped right into course of execution. I said, okay, what are my metrics? So if I send out 10 resumes a week, I should get this done. Or if I make 20 connections a week, I should, it should lead to the results that I wanted. But I didn't do a good job of analyzing the mission. And I would say analyze your terrain, right? So for me, I knew I wanted to reside in Tampa.
Sure. Well,
who are the top 10 employers in Tampa? I don't think I could have answered that question 6 months ago. So how to analyze the terrain? Who are the top logistics providers in this area? That's something I wanted to do. So, what are the companies? What are the targets? What are the things that you want to be targeting, in your transition? And that sort of analyze the terrain. Enemy, friendly forces, man. Who do I know? How do I build a coalition to help me find a job or find my next vocation or whatever? And who is it that I want in that coalition? I'll just tell you, I thought I had a big network. When I started to list it out, I realized my network was in the DoD space, right? So I didn't have a big network outside. So when you're looking at terrain analysis and targets, okay, now I got to start doing some collection. How do I expand that network? How do I build all that? So, and if you do that sort of slowly and focused and do those informational interviews, it'll help you to get to the answer. The question is, what do you want to do next? I thought I wanted to go into consulting. I did an informational interview with a consultant and she had been on a consulting offsite consulting job for 5 years. So Monday she gets on a plane, Thursday night she would come home. And as I talked to her, this sounded really great, very lucrative. She had a great title. Her LinkedIn was great. Super nice, super informative. But I asked her about work-life balance, which I think is incredibly important to a lot of folks out there. And she said, well, I wasn't really present for my daughter's high school years. Mm. I was like, wow. And I could hear that. And so that helped me analyze a target, right? That removed that sort of from my IPB, right? That was not an objective I wanted to go after anymore. So I think that if you go slow to go fast, you'll narrow that stuff down. And then once you get that piece, you can kind of define your mission statement, your key tasks, and then develop the course of action. So I don't know if that's helpful. I kind of rambled a little bit.
No.
But
it's incredibly helpful because I tell people all the time, you got to treat transition like a mission. And what you just said is exactly what I mean. And there's certain things you do at certain stages within the mission planning. And it isn't that, necessarily, actions on the objective are occurring, which means my resume is being loosed when I'm 10 months out. right? Let's just slow down to go fast and think through what are the facts of kind of what I'm going through, what are my assumptions and all the stuff you just went through. So, and people in the military get that, right? I don't care if you're Coast Guard, Marines, Navy, Army, you understand how you plan to execute a mission, right? Your transition is a mission. So kind of consider some of the stuff Sean said here and apply it to your own transition, because I think until you're about 3 months out anyway, no one wants to talk to you. I mean, like from closing the door and getting a job. So focus all of those months ahead of the 3 months out on exploring those sorts of things and asking a lot of questions through networking and conversations. So anything else, Matt, on that at all?
Yeah, I think you know, once you kind of get to those things and you sort of analyze, you know, where you want to go or what it is you want to do, and you gather that info, then start assigning your metrics. Like, okay, now I know I want to go into the financial sector. Okay, who are the top five, financial firms in the city I want to live in, or what are the top cities for financial firms? You know, you can reverse it. And then you say, okay, now I want to target. So I'm going to hit 10 connections in these firms this week. I'm going to hit, but if you're just kind of randomly doing it at the beginning, you're going to waste a lot of energy because you won't have that focus. And I'll close with kind of on this one. You started it with saying, be patient. That is incredibly important. We have this thing that we think, okay, I'm going to send out a couple resumes. I'm going to get some phone calls. I'm going to move through this, relatively rapid pace. But it's not like any assignment process we've ever gone through before. You fill out, in the Army, you fill out your top 10, you send it to the human resources guys, and hopefully you come back and, your top five. But, there's not a lot of work you have to put in to get your next job. And now you do. Now you've got to put in the work because it's not going to come back that way.
It's not, right? And this is a great sharing out from a guy we're talking about, incredibly successful in his career. Full bird colonel, Sean Schultz. And, I don't know what your metrics were like for you, but a close friend of mine, didn't achieve the same, kind of success that you had, and, kind of, 03, 04 level in transition. And it was 50. He recalls vividly, because he's just this kind of guy. He's a pilot. It's how his mind works. I sent out 50 resumes, Court, and I got 3 responses. That manifested to 2 actual interviews. So that's a real metric. 50 to get 3 to get 2. And now he's a little bit different than you. I think, you kind of have a bit more to offer, but hopefully that's at least helpful for a listener of the work that it's going to take. We talk about 1,000 cups of coffee in the Commit Foundation and how many engagements it actually takes to get to the one that's right for you. And sometimes it's helpful to hear from Sean on that and what that reframing could look like. So, hey, brother, thanks so much for sharing that. I think it's really helpful for folks listening and helping them through kind of how they, in their mind, manage expectations in and around transition and actually tactically do it well, given your experience. Let's continue if we can, man. And I want to talk about high performance now in this moment, because you clearly are a high performer. And so I love just asking, man. When you think about that word, how might you define it for your own life to be a high performer or to, achieve high performance?
Yeah. I've listened to your definition, Court, and I love it. The consistently achieved results that exceed expectations, over a length of a period of time. No, I'm not getting it exactly, but I think, exceeding expectations over a length of time is incredibly important, right? It's not someone who does really well one time and then the next time, doesn't, fall short of expectations or a set standard. It's over consistency over time. But one thing, as I listen to it, I add, someone who consistently works at their full potential at all tasks, plus continues to add to their capabilities, their knowledge, or their skills that increases their potential over time. Because, it's easy to say that this person works at 100%, but what someone who's a high performer is, increasing their 100% by adding capabilities, knowledge, or skills over time, right? So,
love it.
What was 100% to me 10 years ago is probably 50% of my capability or my potential now, because you need to keep adding those things to keep performing at a high level of performance. And they put in the work to get better over the long haul. I mean, none of this stuff comes to you easy. You got to put in the work. And people don't always see the work that's being put in, right? You know, Monday through, if we're going to use a football analogy, you know, Monday through Thursday so that you can perform on Friday. The work is done before the game. That's kind of how I define it.
Absolutely, man. And I love it. So just you know, briefing you back here, boss, on what I'm hearing from you. So according to Sean, a perspective on high performance for your life is exceeding the expectations over time and also adding to your competency or capacity, specifically from a knowledge, skills, and abilities place. And so that might be school, that might be a certification, that might be some professional development training. Heck, it might be a book. What color is your parachute? If we apply this high performance to transition, how do we do that? And then, of course, you got to put in the work to do those things. So I appreciate you sharing it out. And so, you know, it's almost the end of January, right? We're stepping into February in about 2 weeks. A lot of folks do a lot of goal setting this time of year or not. What I can tell you is in my adult life, it's only been the last 2 years that I've been very deliberate about goal setting in January. And so I'm just dropping a challenge right now for folks listening. What are your goals for 2020? And don't have too many. I recommend three personal, three professional. That's kind of how I break it out. But if you're trying to, what are the expectations is what I'm getting at, right? If you're accepting Sean's definition for high performance, well, what expectations have you set? And oh, by the way, let's go ahead and set them for ourselves. Now, if we're in the work environment, we better hope we got a manager that's doing that for us. If they're not, I'd be running away from that opportunity. That's not a job that's going to give to you a whole lot in your life as you move forward, but don't depend on somebody else. What do you expect from yourself in 2020? And then kind of use Sean's definition for high performance here. And guess what? Get out and crush it and perform at a high level. So, Sean, I really appreciate you allowing me to marinate in that a little bit, man. I love that definition. So you got me fired up here, brother. Anything else, man, you want to add at all? Because I want to give you an opportunity if I sparked a thought or a comment before I move on.
No, that was perfect. I appreciate it.
Yeah, buddy. No worries. Hey, let's continue kind of in this tactical way here together, because a lot of people listen to the podcast and they're interested to hear, hey, well, what are you doing in your life to perform at a high level? And so my question for you here is, what habits does Sean have that you specifically learned in the military, right, throughout all that time you spent there, that you apply today in your role at work? Or maybe as a husband or as a dad, right? To do those things well, to exceed the expectations you set for yourself. Any habits, man, you could share with the listeners?
Yeah. So, you know, I think a couple of things that I think, you know, have helped me throughout my career was really this focus on building teams and building relationships. And that's at work. It's outside of work. It's home. But, you know, deliberate times to build those relationships and maintain those relationships, whether that's an email, you know, once or twice a week to somebody you haven't talked to in a while, but you got to keep building those relationships and building those teams. So that's one habit that I'm probably not as good as I need to be, but it's something that I've committed to working on this year. The second, man, is you got to stay focused on what is important and what your goals are. I think Court, you know, you hit on that all your podcasts and everything. Stay focused, man. Write it down. Stay focused. Keep learning. Learn. But one tactical habit that, you know, I didn't think of until we're just talking about this, that I picked it up in transition, and it really helped me a lot. I have a journal. I buy it online. And in the morning, it has a habit of, you know, three things you're thankful for. And in the evening, you write a lesson learned from the day and three things you're thankful for.
I love
really
that journal, man.
That habit. And go ahead.
I love that. Is that a white journal by chance? I'm way off.
Let's see, man. I got one right here. It is. It's a self journal created by Best Self, man.
It's a different one, but that's an incredible reflection, because I'm I'm fired up, man, because I recommend people to journal all the time in transition because I think it's helpful because you got so much on your mind, and being able to write it down sometimes is a great release just in case the conversation might not be as helpful with someone else, or maybe your spouse is tired of hearing it from you. So write the shit down. But those reflections on those questions, can you say one more time, Sean, what those inquiries were in that journal?
Yeah. So in the morning, you write three things that you're grateful for, you're thankful for. And then at the end of the day, you write a lesson learned. You know, it's a traditional, you set a goal for the day and you nest it back to the higher goals. But for me, fundamentally, three things I was grateful for in the morning, a lesson learned, you know, something I could have improved on from that day, and three things I'm grateful for before I go to sleep. And I want to nest it back to, you know, this transition piece, because I could take this and I would flip back through days, right? And I found like this recurring theme, my family. I was thankful for my family. Like I was thankful for being financially stable. Like those are my friends. And so then that helped me identify what was important to me, because if I was thankful for that for every day, I didn't want to go into a profession that wouldn't allow me to be significant in those parts of my life, right? I didn't want to take a profession that would force me to forego the things I was super grateful for in order to achieve something else. And so that was helpful for me. That I think is an incredible habit I picked up, you know, as part of transition, it's something to think about for all your listeners.
Absolutely, man. What a gift you're giving folks right here listening, because what we're talking about here in a way is partially a gratitude practice, right? And I'm not a scientist. You don't need to hear it from me. I'm just going to tell you to check out the book. It's called Start Here, Mastering the Lifelong Habit of Well-Being. And one of the 9 practices that they advocate in that book is a gratitude practice, right? And what not? I mean, first of all, I'm an advocate for a gratitude practice throughout all of life, but especially in transition, because guess what? There's so much uncertainty. And so, you know, having this reflection on, even though there's so much uncertainty and maybe I feel defeated, maybe I don't know what my life's going to look like next, you still got things to be thankful for. But our brain doesn't typically work that way. And science will tell us that too. We're a sponge for the negativity in life, and we're a Teflon for the positive things going on. But if you've got a journal like Sean does, and is asking you those questions, you can identify those things. And in Sean's words, he saw patterns, and that's how we begin to frame what a fulfilled life looks like. And I'll tell you, don't have any performance anxiety when it comes to this, right? It's just your stream of consciousness. Sometimes I'm grateful for a cup of coffee. That's what comes to me in that moment, right? I'm grateful for a cup of coffee, right? And so that may mean I want to be in a job where I have time to have one in the morning. I'm not running out the door so early, or maybe I got to, you know, it has an impact in a number of different ways. So what a great gift, man, and thanks for the permission there to just let me continue to rant on why that journal is important. Where can you find something like that, man? And what was the name of it again?
Yeah, so it's a self-journal. Created by Best Self, and I think it's out of the UK, but you can get it online. That's where I ordered it.
Bam.
Yeah.
That's all we needed, man. Self Journal by Best Self. And by the way, that just came to us, right? I mean, Sean's an advocate because he uses it, but we get no kickbacks on this thing for something like that. We just want to be helpful, right? And it's important for me to say that. Awesome, man. Let's continue here, boss. And I want to talk about management. I've had a lot of folks on this show. I don't know that I've ever had anyone that's managed teams at the level that you have. And so I just would love to hear any insights that you might have in this moment, because there's a lot of folks that listen to the show that are managing folks and want to do it well, or want to be managers, and they're not yet. But when they get their chance, they're ready to crush it. So are there any habits, Sean, that you could maybe share in this moment that you assess to be foundational to high-performing managers?
Yeah, first and foremost, this can be taken the wrong way when I say this, but, you know, because we don't want a manager who's just there that's always looking up the flagpole. But first and foremost, a manager has to understand their boss's intent and what is important to their boss, because that's where it starts, right? You know, at the end of the day, the metrics that you've got to achieve or whatever success looks like is going to be defined a little bit by your boss, by your superior. And so you have to understand what's important to them and then go after it and achieve it and help them you know, that's part of understanding your role, right? So, like, I go back to my being a scout player. What was important to the team was, you know, getting that right. And, you know, and so everybody has a role. Understand what your boss's intent and their, and what your role is in achieving your boss's objectives. That's first and foremost. Go ahead.
Can I just pause for a moment on this one? Because there's a lot of folks I'm coaching that struggle with this. And so I'm just curious, like, one thing I would say is, don't depend on your boss to be good at that. And I don't know if you'd agree with me on that or not, Sean. I mean, you've performed at some really high levels, but sometimes bosses aren't really good at communicating intent and what success looks like. And so if you happen to be that person that's thinking to themselves, I have no idea what my boss wants me to do, I'm just kind of existing, then the burden's on you, the full person being managed, to ask and get clarity around that, right? Because I think it's important. Would you agree, Sean, on that one, man? And did you experience that at all, or was it not part of your experience?
Yeah, so I'd say, you know, spike the football quarter, that's a touchdown, because you are, so you're spot on. I've heard that, well, I don't know what's important. Well, ask. Like, most bosses are going to be, you know, or maybe they don't realize they're not being clear on what's important to them. You know, ask. It doesn't, there's no penalty. The penalty is by going off on your own and not achieving the, helping the team achieve the objectives that, that the team needs to, you know, for you to do your part, right? So ask. You know, as part of the transition, I had the wonderful opportunity to do a fellowship through the Chamber of Commerce at Hiring Our Heroes program. And I was working for, she was probably 35, and it was her first time in a leadership position, managing a team. And, you know, I was her subordinate, which is, it was awesome to be on the other side of that. But her and I would share a lot of cups of coffee, and I would say, well, what's important to your boss? And she said, you know, I don't know. That's a great question. And I said, well, have you asked? You know, in those services we have, we're real, you know, it's in our doctrine. We, you know, every division commander, everybody has a bumper sticker on what they think is important, right? So it's very clear. But in the corporate world, I think it's not as clear. And you have, it is on that initial manager to ask, what is important? What are the metrics you want me to achieve?
Absolutely.
I think that's, and then secondly, I would say for an aspiring or a new manager is the ability to communicate up, down, and laterally and build your team and your team's next to you with a shared purpose and understanding. You know, when you look at how you communicate, you know, I'll use this the same example. I would read her weekly report, and I said, you know, what doesn't come across to me is, how are you helping your boss achieve her objectives, right? Like, all this is great, but how are you helping your boss achieve her objectives? And you have to be able to communicate that up. And then, you know, when you communicate that, you got to be able to give feedback to your subordinates on how they're doing, how they're helping you achieve, and what you're doing to help them succeed in their role, because, you know, they want to succeed too. So I'd say those two things, understand your bosses, and then communication, are probably those two things will take you a long, long way.
Awesome. And I think it's good, right? Because sometimes we get a list of seven things and we're a bit overwhelmed and we're trying to figure out where can we find some focus. And so I think having these two habits that you're sharing out, it's enabled you to perform at a high level as a manager and see other managers do it well, is really helpful. And so to brief it back for the listener, number one, coming from Sean, to be a high-performing manager, understand your boss's intent and know what's important to your boss. And if you don't know, once again, ask. That burden is on you. Don't be bitching that you don't know and be talking about how bad your boss is. You know, hey, lead up a little bit, right? Lead up's a real word. Sean just talked about how he led up in his internship opportunity. I mean, you led that girl. I mean, you were a gift to her, whether she recognized it or not. And I remember you reflecting on how fun of an experience that was for you, because you felt like you were developmental in her journey and she happened to be your boss. So that's also another thing that can happen. And number two, just communicate. Communication is so key. That's our most casualty protection weapon in this world of life outside the military, is our ability to communicate up, down, and laterally, according to Sean. And really, Just one more thing I want to highlight here in your sharing, as you talked about that Chamber of Commerce internship and the fact that you were working for someone younger than you. Hey, veterans, might be a commonplace, y'all. Settle on in, right? Settle on in if you're retiring like me and Sean. I interviewed with a 31-year-old millionaire in my 40s.
Yeah.
President of a company. Incredibly bright, right? Gone are the days of because you're older, you've got more experience, and you're the person that's managing and running the show. And so I just kind of opening up maybe that reframing for some folks to consider. Would you agree, Sean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And get used to having to prove yourself or having to establish a reputation without a rank on the front of your shirt.
There you go.
That one of these things where I think we're going to talk about, but you know, one of the things that takes an adjustment is when you walk into a room and that the kid who's 28 might be the smartest guy in the room. And you somehow have to build credibility with him because your credibility isn't from your rank anymore. It's on what you do every day, how prepared you are every day for that meeting or that event or your ability to do your job. Because you're only as good as is what you're doing right now. There's no rank, you know, you don't wear it on the front of your shirt, you know, and that for me was an adaptation that I had to get used to, but it's good to recognize and be understanding of it. I thought that would be much easier than it was, but I would find that I would say something and people would kind of like, who is this guy? Like, what is he, you know? And that was not something I ever had to worry about before. You have to prove yourself.
I think it's good though. Yeah, I think it is. I think it's healthy, right? So appreciate you kind of, you know, just sharing some vulnerability there, man, in this moment on one of the things that was tough for you, right? And in my opinion, it might tie back to just that strong desire you have to want to be impactful and deliver impact and do significant things. I think I got two more questions, man, for you. And so I do want to get some insight into teaming because you've been a part of a number of teams in your life. Any habits to high-performing teams, you know, the collective unit, when I say teams, that you might want to share?
Yeah, I think, you know, Court, you've been part of some great teams, you know, and I think that all teams sort of have a lot of the foundational, like you talk about. And this talks to understanding your boss, but first and foremost, a shared vision of what success looks like. If everybody has buy-in to what success looks like, then everyone has a clear understanding of where the team's going. You know, I got a list here. I'm trying to keep it short, but you know, everyone knows their role, right? And is extremely good at their role. I used to have this phrase, man, if the Army wants you to be a street sweeper, be the best damn street sweeper there is. You know, get a new broom, man, paint the lines, go above and beyond so that someone goes, man, that dude's ready to move from street sweeping to, I don't know what the promotion rate is for street sweepers, but what, you know, be the best at your role on that team. And then the team has, you know, shared hardship, togetherness. And if everybody's putting in the work to get it done, there's shared ownership of the team's success and failure, right? So it's not like, well, we didn't get this done because Sean didn't do his job. It's shared, right? So if Sean's struggling, someone comes and gives him a helping hand. And then the last thing that, you know, I'll touch on with teams is you play to the team's strengths, right? You're playing to everybody's strengths. You're not trying to always improve on weaknesses. It's like, what are we good at? And let's be awesome at what we're good at. Play to the team's strengths. I don't tell too many people because, you know, you seem to get booed off the field, but I do like the Pats, you know? And one thing, Tom Brady doesn't throw 80-yard passes because he doesn't have the arm anymore. They win games at 10 to 15 yards at a time. You know, Julian Edelman's not trying to go, in a leap contest in the corner, right? He's running across the middle because that's what he's good at. And so you play to the team strengths.
Absolutely.
Is that helpful?
Damn right it is, man. And just briefing it back on what you shared, I got five things from Sean about high-performing teams. They have a shared vision and they understand what success looks like. Number two, the folks on the team know their role and there's a commitment to do it extremely well. Number three, they go through shared hardship, which I think is really interesting. And I agree 100% because it builds trust. Number four, there's shared ownership of success and failure. And number five, there's a strengths-aligned kind of mindset where the team plays to the strengths. And what I'm hearing in that is there's a focus that comes out of that for the team. And I can hear my old boss right now, Zach Maritas, talking about focus when it comes to, well, we're doing things really well. Let's take on this new thing. Nope, let's stay focused and let's continue to do the things we've committed to do really, really well before we try to do other things. So thanks a lot for sharing, man. All right, dude, two more questions here, I think, for us. I think I just told you two more, but I'm adding one more because I'm so excited. And I'm just curious, man, you know, as we kind of begin to close out together, what do you miss most from the Army? And I know it's not the dinners with your family because you have that now, right? But what do you miss, right? Like, as people ask me all the time, do you miss it, Court? And I say, no, I don't miss it. I miss the people, but I don't miss the Army. I'm thankful for the time that I had, but I'm excited about what the future holds for me. But what about you, man? What do you miss the most?
Yeah, I think, you know, every veteran you ask is going to pretty much resonate like with that. Like, I miss the people, but I don't really miss the people because I think, you know, I'm still fairly connected with them. I mean, awesome. There's camaraderie. I think I'm going to miss over time, you know, the team structure. But I think the things that I miss the most are actually things that I'm enjoying the most of being out. And it's sort of an oxymoron, right? So I miss the structure. I miss, you know, when that there's a line and block chart for who's in charge, right? There's when someone walks in a room and he's got has a star on his chest, the general walks in and says, I want X, right? Everyone in that room knows that that person has the authority to say, I want X, right? And now there's shared purpose, right? We're gonna accomplish what that guy, that structure. But it's a little bit different on the other side. When everyone's wearing a suit and a tie, and you're like, well, who was that? And who do they work for? And how do you get, you know, I'm sure you're coaching the managers, you know, now it's more like, well, I've got to meet my objectives. And if I give time to this project, that takes away from this other project. Who has the structure and the authority to sort of allocate time and resources? And so that part I loved about the Army because it was clear, right? It's very mm-hmm. clear. On the other side, you know, it's nice to have to sort of be prepared every day to establish your credibility and to keep up on your game. You can't rely on what you did in the past, right? Every day matters on the other side. And so you don't wear your authority on your uniform. You have to gain that. You have to lead without authority. And that to me is challenging and makes me get up every day to build those relationships and keep building, you know, my network and keep contributing to the team. So yeah, what I miss the most is also what I enjoy the most about being out.
Awesome. I love the kind of you're talking about, influence is the word that resonates with me when you're talking about the lack of structure and where you're needing to focus on in this moment of time, in this new role, in this new career, is a rediscovery of how best can I be that effective, positive influence. And that's really how I define leadership. And so it's a brand new leadership laboratory for you in this second season. So thanks for sharing that, man. Really interesting for me to hear. Last question, man, what's next for Sean, right? What are you and Renee focused on, or maybe what are just you focused on? But you know, what's 2020 going to look like, or 2020 and beyond, man?
Yeah, so I think, you know, 2020 was still in a period of I'm still in a period of transition. Yeah, I'm only 6 months from my retirement. I like what I'm doing now, but I know that there's still future. So I'm going to keep pursuing some other things, but. One thing that I've set a goal on is to maximize my community engagement in a nonprofit. I want to find a nonprofit or a community group here in the Tampa area that I can donate, you know, give some time to and get something back from. You know, I've looked at a couple things. I'm going slow to go fast to pick, you know, what's right for me. But that's one of my goals this year is to get involved in a nonprofit and hopefully maybe get on the board. Of doing something with the community. Now that one of the best things about retiring is now, you know, if you're going to move, it's your choice. And we're going to plant our roots for a while, which allows me this opportunity to do this in the second season. And then my second one, which is to learn a new skill. I think my daughter and I are going to take some sailing lessons this summer to learn how to sail a boat. I don't know a damn thing about it, but I'm going to learn, and it's going to increase my capacity.
I love it, man. So I'm putting a mark on my calendar. I'm going to reach out to you, whether you let me or not, with a question in about 8 months. Hey, man, are you on that board?
Yeah, you there, Court?
To close out here with our high performance breakdown, and but before I do, is there anything else, man, you got on your mind that you want to make sure you get out before we close out?
No, I absolutely appreciate the time, and I hope it was beneficial for your audience and your listeners. I know that I'm a subscriber, and the guests that you had on, every one of them I grab a nugget of knowledge from, and so I just hope I was able to contribute to somebody's transition or to their, leadership or whatever it is that they hopefully take a nugget away from this, hour and a half of their time. I absolutely was honored to be on here with you, Court, and I truly enjoy our friendship.
Yeah, absolutely. Ditto, man. Thanks. And I guarantee that happened, right? It's how can we make one small impact on one life? And I think that's just my dream, my vision, how I serve is I want to inspire high performance in others. And that comes in a different way. And this podcast is only successful because folks like you come on and give those perspectives. So let's break it on down, brother, right? The high performance breakdown. We close out every episode this way just because I love it, man. I think people get a laugh out of it. So you know the deal. You've been listening, but I'll just coach you up real briefly. I'm going to say breakdown on three. I'll say one, two, three. And when you hear three, Sean, that's your invitation to give us three claps and the words boom shakalaka to get us out into our day with some energy. And you can add anything after that you want to, although nothing's required. Got it?
Got it.
All right, brother. Hey, closing us out, wrapping up episode number 5 of season 2, y'all, of High Performance Pathways, my friend Sean Schultz with the High Performance Breakdown. Break us on down, brother. Breakdown on three. One, two, three.
Boom shakalaka.
Yeah, man. Dropping it hard. Coming out of Florida. That's the boom shakalaka from Sean. To connect with Sean, and I encourage you to do so, you can find him on LinkedIn at Sean Schultz, and that's spelled S-C-H-U-L-D-T. And then he has the letters MS, CPL after his name. So that's what you're looking for. Sean Schultz, MSCPL. And you can find this episode and more episodes of High Performance Pathways on my website, courtwhitman.com. Now get out there, y'all. Consider what Sean shared and chase high performance in your own lives.